finally, a source of raw, real, and honest information on healthcare issues that matter most. Welcome to BS Free MD. From the latest medical information to how to stay sane as a doctor or a patient, no subject is taboo, no BS is allowed. Now, let's welcome your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh.
All right, what we're going to do today is we're interrupting kind of our financial services month because the world is in flames again with COVID.
And we've been getting inundated with emails, messages, Instagram, calls, texts. People want more information. I guess they don't care about their finances since they're all burning up anyway with the
We're really going to try to do this succinctly within 35 minutes or so.
Impossible.
But I think it'll be more effective if we do that because we're going to talk a bit about the vaccines, what they're doing, what they're not doing.
Boosters,
early treatment, where I think this is going. Are we going to be in another shutdown, et cetera, et cetera? I'll give you, you know, we will talk about.
We could talk forever, but
our views.
We're going to give you a little update because you've been wanting it.
Hopefully some information that's helpful to spread to other people in a way that's easy to understand without being like politically igniting.
Correct.
Shall we say?
And so this is our opinion. This is two doctors practicing medicine for 30 years with, you know, me being a little bit of the devil's advocate. I like to see both sides. Maybe I really am a 9 on the Enneagram, but anyway, I want to try to keep some balance and throw some stuff out there like I do to Tim, hit some curveballs. So before we deep dive into that, our sponsor today, which we are so grateful for and love to thank and are going to honor this month, basically, is Deputy. And Deputy is an amazing program that they help with covering when your staff is out sick. So how often at your practice or actually your business, do you have someone call out sick? How much time does it take to find replacements who can fill in? If you need to cancel appointments or schedules because you're short-staffed, what does that cost your practice? Deputy is a simple app that's helped more than 250,000 workplaces tackle this problem. Deputy makes it easy to schedule staff in line with patient demand, communicate schedules with your team, and instantly find replacements when someone calls out sick. So to learn more and try Deputy out for free, you can go to drpodcastnetwork.com/deputy. That's DEPUTY, just like it sounds. I will put the link in.
If your business is in jeopardy, it's time to call Deputy.
I love that.
Isn't that great? All right, cool. All right, where are we starting, May? Because we got to bang through this stuff and give people. This is what we're going to do. We are going to drop Moab-sized truth bombs and bunker bust bullshit.
Love it. And I'm going to keep him in line. That's what I do. All righty, Tim. So let's talk about where we're at with vaccines. Are they working? Are they not working? Should we all be on the vaccine bandwagon? Should everybody be immunized? And what do we all think?
No, yes, 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 no, no, yes. Yeah, so yeah, it's okay. All of the above. Okay, so who should be vaccinated? I think. What do you want
think.
First? What do you want?
What
first?
I want people to hear is we think. This is what we think.
This is what we think. So you can do your, you know, your due diligence, your whatever. I think the biggest
part of it, I think, is the word think. Please think.
And uncertainty. There's no certainty in this. I think anyone that speaks with absolute certainty from when we started doing this back in March of 2020 to now, anyone that speaks with absolute certainty is not speaking with any heart of science. They're speaking with a political bent or God knows what, or arrogance, or right. I don't know. Make your own judgment. It's not mine to judge.
So do we support the vaccine? Yes. Do we have reservations about the vaccine? Yes. Explain.
Okay, so here's the deal. I think when all of this is done, if it's ever done in our lifetimes, which it may not be, I think that we're going to look at the fact that these vaccines were an absolute colossal failure and we should have never done them. I think that is what's going to come to be. And I think that's going to take a long time to figure out, potentially years. And this is why. This is why. If you look at highly vaccinated countries versus not highly vaccinated countries, their mortality rates are the same as they were a year ago. So the mortality rates in Israel, where they have 85% vaccination, are about the same as they were in September of 2020 when they had no vaccine at all. Okay. Now, if it was just the Delta variant freaking out and killing unvaccinated people, and these wretched unvaccinated people were spreading it around and getting really sick and dying, you would expect countries with very low vaccination rates to just be exploding in mortality, like have way worse mortality rates, and they don't. So there's really no difference. Okay. Now,
I would jump in quickly because I don't know if you're going to go down this path, but from talking with others about that, a lot of people would argue that it's not just about mortality, right? Because they're going to bring up the fact that there's a lot of morbidity, use of hot resources, possible long-term effects, long-haul COVID, potential chronic illness and damage from people that don't die.
Right. But you also get morbidity and potential long-term COVID and long COVID and God knows what other things from the vaccines. Like the people that are very anti-vaccine, and we have some people in groups that we associated with that are very, very anti-vaccine, would say that especially in certain subsets, especially in young males, that the vaccine itself is orders of magnitude worse than the chance of A, getting COVID, and B, getting severely ill from COVID. So you hear people say, well, I want to vaccinate my 17-year-old son because his, roommate at college got native COVID and got really sick. Well, right. But the difference is, in a vaccination program, you're giving everyone in their blood the virus. In natural immunity, they have to inhale it through their nose. They have mucosal immunity. They have all of these other intervening effects that prevent you from getting vaccinated. So you have a 100% chance of spike protein exposure in your blood if you get the vaccine. You have a very low chance of getting severely ill in those younger demographics from native COVID. Does it happen? Yes. Is it happening more with Delta? I think it absolutely is.
Yeah, and I think what people don't realize is it also happens from other viruses. It's just not publicized as much, and it's not as highly, but you can get it with flu, you can get it with other viral infections, you can get myocarditis, post-viral infection from all kinds of things.
It's another dirty secret. When you start to talk to people that actually work in pediatric ICUs, are there children with severe COVID? Yes. But actually, there's more children in ICUs from what I'm understanding from people on the ground with infections like RSV, influenza type things. They may have a COVID diagnosis, but it's not the COVID that's putting them on a ventilator or whatever the case may be.
It's now these pissed off other viruses that have been, I guess, suppressed and haven't been allowed to circulate for the last 2 years.
And so that gets
there's a lot of things that are confounding
and
things.
And it's hard to define those numbers. I'll give everyone a tip on numbers. As soon as when somebody only quotes percentages, you know they're lying to you, okay? They're manipulating you, all right? So, for instance, if you have a penny stock and it goes up 800% in a day, that's really great. But if it's worth a 16th of a cent and you put 10 bucks in it, you didn't make that much money. So now you got 80 bucks. Who cares? Doesn't matter, right? If you've been investing, X amount of, 10% of your income for 40 years and it does 7% a year compounded, yeah, you got a ton of money at the end of 40 years. So when they give percentages, for instance, I was in Sturgis and, oh yes, I did bring back a wonderful new wallet chain. No t-shirts, but I did bring back freaking COVID. I got the COVID. I got the Delta. I am Delta Force immune now.
Let's tell the truth, though. Tim did not get COVID in Sturgis.
I got it from my riding partner.
He got it, and he got the exposure before he went to Sturgis.
That's exactly right. And then I happened to go to
Sturgis. But should have you have gone to Sturgis and spread it around unknowingly?
Well, I didn't have symptoms till I got back. So was I spreading it? We'll get to that, because I'm vaccinated and talk about who's spreading this.
So what do we do? Lock ourselves down again?
Well, I think that's coming
anyway. Let's
soon
stay back on track. We're talking about vaccines. Are they working? Are they not working? So
I found, I'm going to read a little bit. I found an amazing article on Substack. UGPS. We'll try to link this. And it's fascinating. Countries with high vaccination rates are now seeing the same number of deaths or more as they had at the beginning of September 2020. If you peer deeper, you'll generally find this. The vaccinated remain substantially protected against serious illness or death, but the unvaccinated are entering the hospital and dying at very high rates indeed. As if to compensate, thus Israel has made the same case fatality rate around 0.7% before and after mass vaccination. If this is just Delta being more dangerous, then we would expect countries with lower vaccination rates to be enduring truly staggering mortality right now, but they are not. In heavily vaccinated countries, Delta is raging with a rare fury among the unvaccinated. But in lesser vaccinated countries, it is doing nothing unusual. This means that the efficacy statistics are broadly unreliable. The exact reasons don't really matter. Either the vaccines have the power to change the whole picture or they don't. None of this should surprise us. It was fascinating. One of the most vaccinated countries in the world, probably the most as far as a developed country, is Iceland. And so everyone got vaccinated in Iceland and they're like, woohoo, we're going on vacation. Let's get out of Iceland and go to Europe. And they brought back Delta to Iceland and infected tons of people with Delta. Because the gigantic misrepresentation of these freaking vaccines is they do not stop spread. And I would contend they enhance it. And the way they enhance it is they're leaky. So when you look at breakthrough infections, so people that got vaccinated and then got COVID, and they culture their nose, because that's how this is transmitted. It's an upper respiratory virus. It's a respiratory virus. They have the same amount of viral load as people that are unvaccinated. So vaccinated people can transmit this better, or not better, but as well as unvaccinated. Where it gets complicated is depending on where you are from when you got vaccinated. Was it 2 months ago? Was it 6 months ago? Was it 5 months ago? If you're unvaccinated and you're just acting like a person that's vaccinated and just doing whatever you want to do and going to concerts and Sturgis and whatever, your chance of getting absolutely show-wasted is way higher. So the vaccine, clearly in the situation we're in right now in North America, offers pretty significant protection to serious illness and death.
So keeping you out of the ICU or ventilator status is what you're saying.
Right. But when you look at this from 50,000 feet, 5 years from now, did the vaccines actually make it worse by giving you a non-sterilizing vaccine and pushing the variants?
Yes, and by that, and we posted on our Facebook page, I did a while ago, a virologist from Canada explained it very well. What that means is that, you know, it's like a war. And if we have this vaccine and the virus sees that now there's this artillery in our system to try to kill it, it will mutate just like antibiotics do. Most people have heard of MRSA, where it changes so that penicillins can't kill that kind of staph. Well, the virus wants to survive, so it starts to change and morph to make itself more hardy into another form like this Delta so that it can attack you easier and it's resistant to the vaccine.
Right. I mean,
therefore, the more people that you're vaccinating but not completely, then the virus is like, I'll get in there and I'll start to change shape because it recognizes this.
Right, and the problem with partial sterilization is if you have a really super, super, super bad strain, right, that mutates into like mega killer, kills 80% of people, okay, it tends not to be very contagious because it immediately kills the host. The host gets sick, the host stays home, the host doesn't go out, the host dies. So those really lethal variants tend to get burned out very rapidly. If you vaccinate people with a leaky vaccine so they get sick, but they don't get really, really sick, then it pushes those more lethal variants. And then who gets hammered? The unvaccinated. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get into in a little bit, we got to talk about ADE because I think it's an absolute 100% guarantee with this vaccine.
Right. So would you say then that everybody should be vaccinated so that there's no unvaccinated to get infected? Or does it really matter because COVID vaccinated people are still technically carrying and spreading?
Well, we may have painted ourselves into a corner where we should have never started the vaccines. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Have we ever done this during a pandemic?
No.
Before?
And we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that in one second. So that may be the answer, but we may have painted ourselves into a corner so much that it becomes so potentially lethal to be unvaccinated that you're just forced from a lethality pressure to get vaccinated. That may be the case, right? And that's why, I mean, so like,
what about letting yourself maybe get, like you did, get infected with a hopefully less mortalizing effect, so that you've already got the vaccine, now you've got infected with COVID, probably Delta, so now you have natural immunity to get T and B cell immunity, and maybe that's the way to go.
No, 100%. Like what I have?
Yeah.
Like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, my second vaccine was in February, and then I got a really super mild case of COVID for like 4 or 5 days in August. I did take Peter McCullough's early treatment program.
We'll get to that soon.
I did everything. Did the vaccine save my life? It might have. Did it save me from going to the hospital? Absolutely, it could have. I don't know. I mean,
that's really fascinating. When I talked to everybody, and I was in another country where they're all proponents, mostly, of the vaccine, the story is, well, the reason he didn't die was because he was vaccinated. That's what it's supposed to do.
No, it's because I had a gin and tonic the night before. I mean, it's like it's unknowable. That's the problem.
Goofy,
I mean,
right?
it's ridiculous.
We know people that were vaccinated that still died, and vice versa. So people that weren't vaccinated that lived, like your 92-year-old mother and all her cohorts in the independent living facility. Are we going to jump into the boosters and what's going on with the boosters?
Okay,
and
so
what we think of boosters?
Well, I am a huge fan of bustiers, and I have been since I
No. Booster, not bustier.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that's too bad.
Focus.
I was getting a little bit hot and bothered.
So the new recommendations, of course, are, and what you're hearing is that, well, yeah, the vaccine wanes, so therefore, if you get a third dose, then it gives you even more immunity, and therefore more protection, and now everybody's going to require not only mandatory vaccines and passports, but a booster dose.
Okay, so here's the deal. Israel's getting slammed. They got 80-85% vaccination rate. They have now, you know, because they have vaccine passports, the whole deal. It's ridiculous. And they say if you're over 6 months post-vaccination and you don't have a booster, you're not vaccinated anymore. That's literally where they're at. So I honest to God think the boosters are terrifying. And this is why. It's something called antibody dependent enhancement. Okay. So there's a thing that's happened, and this is what you haven't heard from very many people, especially Fauci, which is they had been trying to make SARS vaccines, coronavaccines for humans for about 20 years. Every single time they tried this before, like back 17, 18 years ago, and the reason they gave up and didn't develop one back then was it caused antibody-dependent enhancement.
Explain.
Okay, there's enhancing antibodies, and there's like blocking antibodies. So we assume that if you develop antibodies to something, that the antibodies just, you know, kill the virus. No. Some antibodies that you produce actually help the virus get into your cells and infect you. That's bad. So when you have a non-sterilizing vaccine, like a coronavirus vaccine, and you especially have pushed the mutation rate, you may be pushing it so that the vaccine actually, for the newer variants, has more of an enhancing effect and not a blocking effect.
So it helps the virus replicate, reproduce.
It helps it get into your body. So there's a couple big examples of this. The most famous is respiratory syncytial virus, which is similar to it's a very simple respiratory virus like coronavirus.
RSV.
Devastating to young children. You know, children under 6 months, 4 months of age, they get this, you know, 6 week olds, terrible, intubated, die, horrible. I've dealt with tons of kids in ICUs with RSV. Really common. We always freak out. The pediatricians always freak out when they make their first diagnosis of RSV in like the 5 year old that's not going to get very sick. And they email everybody in your medical group and say RSV's in town. Right? It's bad. Okay. So they tried to make an RSV vaccine, which would be amazing. It would change medicine. It would have been like the Haemophilus influenza vaccine, which was a bacterial vaccine that worked, that eliminated epiglottitis. It does not exist as a disease any longer. Devastating disease to children. Gone. Okay? So they made the RSV vaccine, and they injected it into kids. And they're like, wow, this thing blows up antibodies. It makes unbelievable immunity. It's great. Until the kids got RSV. And then the kids that were vaccinated died at a way higher rate than the kids that were unvaccinated. And they're like, oh, crap, it caused ADE. And so why do I think ADE exists with this or potentially does? Two reasons. One, earlier, 17, 18 years old or 18 years ago, different technology, could never make a human vaccine that worked very well for coronaviruses, and it appeared to cause ADE. Secondly, if you look at what we have now with the 100 million or 300 million or gazillion people that we have vaccinated, there appears to be some emerging evidence, and I don't have quotes for this yet, but as that comes out, we will stay on it, that if you get vaccinated and then you get coronavirus within the first 2 weeks of that vaccination, well, the antibodies are ramping up. It appears that those people get really ill, and they get more ill than unvaccinated people, okay? After 2 weeks, till probably 5 or 6 months, it appears to be very robust at protecting you from getting severely ill at this time. The question is, are the cases in Israel happening? Because as immunity wanes and you get to a certain level of antibody, you get more of an enhancing effect and less of a blocking effect. So at the shoulders of building immunity and decline in immunity from the vaccine, does the vaccine actually make you sicker? And the answer is, we don't know, but there's definitely a chance of that. And so that brings in the whole booster thing, which is endless boosters. So then you have to get booster after booster after booster, because if your immunity wanes to any level, you're uber screwed. Well, what is that going to do? It's going to continue to push the variants. And if it pushes the variants, it may push ADE, where the actual booster makes you sicker. There's definitely a possibility of that. And again, I'm not saying I know this, and I know this is the case, and the globalists are making the boosters. I don't know. That's the point. The point is that you should practice medicine and science with a big freaking dose of humility and say, you know, we got to pump the brakes on this because we don't know what the hell's going on. That's the problem, is everyone has been so damn certain. You know, ivermectin will solve the problem. It will cook you breakfast. It will take your eye bags away. And you're just like, come on, man. You know, I think it does something, but it doesn't do that. And on the other side, it's like, if you're not vaccinated, you deserve to get put in a concentration camp.
Right.
And I'm like,
come
on.
As I've said all along, and anyone who's a really good thinker is, in the history of humanity and science, everyone's always thought beyond and challenged. I mean, how do you come up with a thesis? How do you challenge that? It's the basics of like science when you're in junior high. And man, like we read through the great influenza and the pandemic of the Spanish flu. Can we even say Spanish flu? That's labeling, whatever.
It's cultural appropriation.
And what happened then? They threw everything, including the cookbook, at people to try to heal them. They challenged each other's and theories, and they thought outside the box, and it was accepted because it's like, we got to find a cure, and which led us to antibiotics and antivirals. And so why there's being shunning on both ends of things for any kind of outside thinking except what big either pharma, government, or the groupthink is blowing my mind. You should always have people that question things, question with humility and challenge it. So then we'll challenge it. And then, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong. But something like this where it's an unknown, how do you just kind of jump on the gravy train and follow the, I hate that, follow the science, because it's like science is all about challenging.
Right. Well,
happening.
How do you trust Fauci when he wasn't, we got to kill this with everything that we have. We got to develop a vaccine. We got to develop therapeutics. We got to try anything. Okay, so ivermectin. We're going to get to ivermectin. So ivermectin, right? Unbelievable drug. It is a wonder drug. That drug has changed. It came out in 1988 when it was first used in humans. It came out in 1981 in veterinary medicine, okay? And it has probably changed in that period of time. I think unquestionably has changed more people's lives and more poor people's lives of any drug developed in that period. I don't think there's even a question of that. Okay. I mean, river blindness affects like 200 million people in the world, and ivermectin just, it cures it. Okay. I mean, it's crazy how good it works. I mean, Nobel Prize winner in 2015 for figuring out that you could give this to humans, that it was really safe in appropriate dosages, that it worked really well. So you have a safe drug. You have a drug that's been approved for 32 or 33 years. Even if it does nothing, if it doesn't cause harm, who gives a crap if you're using it? Like, why would you come out against something like that? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So Fauci's like, yeah, try it. I don't think it works. I think it's crap. But yeah, give her a go. We're going to do that. And we're going to work on the vaccine. And we're going to work on expensive drugs like remdesivir. And we're going to work on naturally occurring peptides that may make your lungs work better. We're going to do all of it because it's a freaking war. And the way we're fighting this war is, it's like, you got the biggest Navy in the world. You've got the biggest Air Force in the world. And you've got the biggest Army in the world, and you're only going to fight it with your Navy.
Right. The thing that's bothered me about all this is, you know, the lack of focus on early treatment on outpatients. And we put in so much effort into the vaccine and masking and locking down. But when in the history of science and medicine would we ever have a patient with some illness and just say, well, you're sick, and I'm just going to do nothing until you're almost dead and in the hospital, and then we'll try everything. Or put stock in a vaccine. I mean,
well,
it's
unless
silly.
Unless your early treatment is super dangerous.
Well, right. Right? But like, go reel it back to before they had antibiotics and someone had sepsis or a cut. They had poultices and herbal things, and they would try, yeah, prayers, and they had witch doctors, and yes, some things were dangerous, but they would try all that they could. Man, HIV comes along and it's like this novel thing. We tried combinations and cocktails and we did everything we could to try to keep these people alive out of the hospital until we figured out what worked. I mean, can you imagine doing that now, like with the flu or even a UTI? Or it's just like, well, you got the flu, you don't need any of that. Like, forget Tamiflu, forget having cough medicine, forget having a inhaled steroid, forget any support things. I mean, same thing with, like, what if you had a UTI and you're just like, we won't do nothing until you're in the hospital with IV Rocephin or PIP and TAS or whatever we're using these days. This is like the freaking, it's killing people all over the world. And it's like, we're going to wait till you're in the hospital.
Right. I mean, look, for most people,
what, like,
for
what's
most
that
people,
about?
For most people, it's the sniffles. Okay.
So let people take their vitamin C, their vitamin D. Use the safe amounts of ivermectin. Yes, don't be going. And in desperation, what's happening? People are getting their hands on fish cleaning tablets because there's hydroxychloroquine, or they think
not.
That.
I'm sorry, that was just ridiculous.
It was stupid, and it was like The Onion. But a horse, they'll go to their local feed store where they can get ivermectin because they're desperate. So why are we being blocked
by the AMA from
organizations to pharmacists to the media to government in allowing us as physicians to treat our patients with any kind of safe, protective, life-saving
experimental treatments. AMA comes out, and the AMA comes out last week and says that they're against ivermectin because people are calling poison control. Well, if we were actually allowed to prescribe it in appropriate doses made by for humans so that there was less contaminants in it, because veterinary medicine is not tested to the same degree as human medicine, then you wouldn't need the BoJack treatment and some moron taking an entire tube that's for a 1,200-pound animal. But instead of the AMA saying, you know what, we support our doctors doing off-label things in a time of crisis because a crisis demands some ingenuity. No, AMA...
That's like...
Our bastard!
It's like saying, you got a gas line pipe break in your yard. Everybody does. And it's like, no, we're not going to come out there and fix it. We're just going to let your place burn down. Meanwhile, everybody's out there with backhoes in their yard, digging up their own pipes and exploding things because they're so desperate.
No,
right.
I mean, yeah, it's absolutely crazy. You know, I was thinking of this analogy. Okay. Cause I got a call today from a referral from a friend because they knew that I was, you know, had studied a lot on the whole COVID thing and was into the C-19 groups and, you know, talked to Peter McCullough and Harvey Risch and all these heroes and whatnot. And she's like, we're trying to get a court order to get ivermectin to a person in a distant hospital from here. Can you come and give it? And I'm like, well, I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, I don't have hospital privileges. I gave her the name of another experimental agent, Zyzemi, that I think works has real potential for critically ill people. But I'm like, okay, look, if I'm an intensivist and I think that ivermectin isn't going to do jack shit for your critically ill COVID patient, but I know that it's not dangerous, then just give it. Like, who cares?
But, I would argue, is it right? Why wouldn't you want to try to, because we're going to reach a critical shortage. Wouldn't it be better to save that for outpatients where
maybe you have more
potential?
I don't think
there's
a critical shortage. This drug is manufactured and given to hundreds of millions of people a year. Because, I don't think that's the issue. The issue is this.
I mean, use it, right. Isn't it resource management?
Not with ivermectin, it's not. I don't think it is at all. Because it's, endemically, the way it's used endemically across the world for endemic river blindness and whatnot, I don't think that's an issue. It's not like monoclonal antibodies where it's complicated to make those. It's not like these little peptides that we have to figure out how to store. I mean, it's a freaking pill.
It's not complicated to make chips for your cars, but somehow the world shut down.
Supply chain problem. So the thing is, But the point is there's a point where you need to offer things to your patient that you disagree with because it's the right thing to do. For instance, can you imagine being an intensive care doctor who literally is like an evangelical atheist? You think that atheism is true. You think that people that believe in any kind of God, in any kind of religion, are total rubes, and you think they're dumb, and you never go to cocktail parties or out to dinner with anyone that isn't an atheist, okay? But you're a doctor, and you want to care for your patients, and you had a patient that's dying in the ICU, and you know they're going to die, and you had the end-of-life talk, and you had the, we need to extubate mom because she's 94 years old, and she's going to pass anyways, and this will be more comfortable. And then they say, well, we're devout Catholics, so we really want our priest that my mother has known for 50 years to come and give her the last rites of the church, because this would mean more to her and to us as a family than anything, because we know medical interventions are done. Do you think that atheist guy, even if to his family and to his dog and to his neighbors is the biggest asshole in the world, is going to say, no, you can't have the last rites of the Holy Catholic Church because I'm an atheist and I think it's crap and I think you guys are rubes? Of course not. He's going to say, absolutely, whatever it takes to give comfort to you and your family, whatever it takes to make this passing from this life to whatever is the next, where I can show compassion, even as a compassionate atheist, yes, I'm going to do that. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. Would you do it to yourself? No, because you don't believe that. But you do it because it's the right thing to do. So if you can get ivermectin to a patient and it does jack squat for their care, and it's not harmful. I mean, it's different if you're trying to do something that's potentially harmful. I mean, inject them with, copper or something like that. And it's not harmful. And you don't do it just because of some, political doctrine, then you're not doing a service to that family and you're not comforting them and you're a dick.
Yeah, I got to chew on that one just because I got to, I haven't really thought through the other scenarios where that's the case, because I think it's quite different, obviously, giving a medication than it is recognizing somebody's spiritual belief and lifestyle things.
Really? Really? How many Jehovah's Witnesses where we would have transfused them? If they were not Jehovah's Witnesses, they'd have got 2 or 3 or 4 units of blood because their hemoglobin was like 3 or 4. We had a trans, and we didn't. We withheld treatment. We withheld treatment
that
we believed was life saving because of their beliefs that we don't agree with.
That's true.
But somehow this is different because this is some political frickin' mass murder, and that's what pisses me off. It's like, if ivermectin doesn't work in the hospital situation, that's fine. It can still be studied, and you can still be compassionate, for the love of God.
No, I know. I just think of all those. I read, I would like to find it and reshare it, an amazing post by an ICU nurse that actually, I think, got fired because she didn't take the vaccine, but it was all about choice and how she's cared for. She wrote it eloquently about how she's done things and cared for people where she disagreed with their choice. You know, the drunk driver that's come in and she's had to care for, to, you're right, the Jehovah Witness who wants to withhold treatment and not get blood products or because of it's their beliefs. We can get into the abortion side of things and all the other things we've done. And so it was really well written, the fact that, you know, we put, you don't want to harm patients, but you do put their wishes ahead, and it doesn't come down to our choice.
We are giving in this country 13-year-old women Lupron to block puberty because they're not sure what gender they are. That is an off-label use for Lupron. Lupron is not indicated for puberty blocking, but it is a really damn good puberty blocker. Okay. We are giving that off-label, which ivermectin for COVID is off-label. Mm-hmm. It's exactly mm-hmm. the same.
Yep.
If you are a 13-year-old woman and you take a puberty blocker, you have about a 90 to 95% percent chance of going on to cross-sex hormones. In other words, testosterone. Once you do that, you have a 100% chance of being infertile. So we look at, and it's politically correct to do, and I'm make your own judgments. I'm just telling you how this works, mm-hmm. where it's politically correct and okay to give super strong hormones to children who cannot consent for a tattoo and can't get a driver's license. Life-altering medical treatments, off-label. But somehow the off-label use of a parasite drug that has changed the lives of countless people with parasitic diseases and might work pretty darn good in COVID when you look at some of the, especially the population, the epidemiology, where you look at Africa and the middle of Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, where basically everyone's on ivermectin at some point because it's so endemic with river blindness, and they have a fraction of the COVID cases compared to South Africa and Egypt and North Africa. And you go, I wonder what's different there. Well, could it be that they have different blood type? Could it be that they have a more youthful population? Yes, all of those things are possibly true, but you know what? Maybe this really good drug that's really safe has something to do with it. And maybe we should just kind of do our little head scratching and go, you don't need a gigantic randomized controlled trial for everything in the middle. When your house is burning down,
yeah,
I don't really care if they studied the, you know, how much water it takes to put out a house of X amount of size. I just care that they have tons of water trucks and they're spraying the, I don't care if the fire chief is also pissing on my house, whatever it takes.
True that.
Make the fire go out. Whatever it takes, make the fire go out.
Great point. Do you want to touch on quickly anything else in the early treatment realm, including the monoclonal Regen?
RegenCov, which is Regeneron's monoclonal antibody, is now being pushed by the powers that be. Fauci mentioned it about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. Massive rollout across the country to the point now where they've run out. Our new clinic we're working at is vigorously trying to get this because if it's an agreeable, politically correct treatment and works as good as they say, which is 50 to 75% decrease in hospitalization and death, I'm 100% behind it. I honestly don't, I don't care. Like it, if it works, put the fire out.
Exactly. If it's not harmful, well, let's try it. That's
and it
kind
appears
of exactly
to,
what,
it right. appears to be incredibly safe.
Right. Any other items on your are we going to save that for next time?
Yeah, I could go down bunny trails like crazy, as you know. I would like to link a couple of these articles. There's a tremendous article I found from the NIH it doesn't even have the year when it was published, but it's all about the history of ivermectin. I think it's really fascinating to read that because it's...
Yeah, get that and we'll link it.
And then you got to read this guy that talks about vaccine failure and the way out. I think that's really interesting. I think we're going to be left... I mean, honestly, I'm glad I got COVID. I mean, I think I have.
I'm jealous because honestly, I just think back to those childhood illnesses. I got all of them. I got the measles, the mumps, rubella, rubeola, chickenpox, and what's left? I didn't have diphtheria.
No, or tetanus. Because you would have died.
But, I don't know. Natural immunity is the best immunity. The body's an amazing thing. And as far as the booster, am I going to get the booster at this point? I would rather, I think, get COVID.
If you can get a mild case of COVID, for sure. I'm going to leave you with this, which is all about leaky vaccines. This is from an article on National Geographic in 2015, and it's called Leaky Vaccines Are Dangerous Things. It's about Merrick's disease in chickens. Andrew, this is directly quoted right from the article. Andrew Reed from Pennsylvania State University thinks that the vaccines were responsible. The Merrick's vaccine is imperfect or leaky. That is, it protects chickens from developing disease but doesn't stop them from becoming infected or from spreading the virus. Inadvertently, this made it easier for the most virulent strains to survive. Such strains would normally kill their hosts so quickly that they'd die out. But in an immunized flock, they can persist because their lethal nature has been neutered. That's not a problem for vaccinated individuals, but unvaccinated birds are now in serious trouble. So much to the point where when you look up backyard chicken farming and Merrick's disease, you have to keep your chicks, your little chicky chicks, right after they hatch, away from the bigger birds until they can get the vaccine, which is about 2 weeks, and you got to immunize them really early, or else you can wipe your flock out. So,
interesting.
So this has happened before and that's not even ADE. That's just a leaky vaccine. We have a leaky vaccine clearly in COVID, but we might have a leaky vaccine that also has ADE, which we don't know about yet. So it's a little bit terrifying, to be honest with you. And I really hope the monoclonals work as well as they are and we can get them rolled out, because at least that's going to be politically expedient.
Acceptable
and
something.
You know.
So much more to talk about, including masks, lockdowns, and firings of people in healthcare that aren't vaccinated. But we will save that. So
how
come
can
back
you
for
mandate
more?
A vaccine that doesn't stop spread? So I'm unvaccinated. I'm taking a risk to myself. I'm not posing a risk to anyone else. That's like saying that's prohibition, right? Like, you have every right in the world to go buy 16 liters of booze, get super drunk, and drink until you're dead. You don't have a right to do that and drive because you're endangering other people. If you want to, like, die in a Keith Moon pool of your own vomit, you are allowed to do that. We don't like that. It's not good. It's bad. You know, it's a bad thing for your family. But it's not illegal. So you can mandate and make drunk driving illegal, but it's pretty hard to make I got drunk at home illegal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I mean, society. Think about what's happening to society. And on that note, remember our sponsor today.
And then it will drive me to drink if I think about what's happening in society.
Oh, boy. This needs to be a dry house for a while then. That'll be like a long time. How long is this going to last? If you want to boost efficiency across your practice and make staff scheduling easier, try the Deputy app. You can try this award-winning technology for free by going to drpodcastnetwork.com/deputy. That's drpodcastnetwork.com/deputy. We will link the fun details that we shared in the show notes for you to look up, the studies, and anything else that comes to mind. We will throw in some COVID stuff every now and then. And obviously, since you're all clamoring for it, please email us your questions at doc@bsfreemd.com.
Excellent. We'll see you all later, and hopefully we stay sane.
It's no secret that medicine is a bit uptight. That's why Tim and I created BS Free MD, to mix things up a little and have fun in the process. Besides, we are having these exact same discussions all the time, so we thought we might as well invite everyone to the party. If you really like us, you can get plenty more and maybe see one of Tim's cool tattoos on our Instagram or Facebook pages at BS Free MD. See you next time.
BS3MD as raw and real as possible, we can't be held responsible for any medical decisions or discussions had as a result of what you've heard on the show. We know, bummer. But the truth is, we really do care about your questions. So feel free to reach out to us by email at doc@bs3md.com.
Tony Fauci here talking to you about when I was in high school. My original girlfriend was known as a Petrie because she was such a dish. A little humor from like back in the 60s, if you know what I mean. I didn't like wearing the wrap because I found it very desensitizing to little Tony, if you know what I mean.
I wish I could do that accent.
It's so fun.